Mr. Stewart, or Ed Stewart, or no?
May it please the court. My name is Robin Stewart. I represent Brian Majors and the other plaintiffs in this case. There's five main points I want to make today. There is a justiciable live controversy in this case. The plaintiffs have standing and a claim that is not moot. If their claim is moot based on the fact that the election has gone by the time the case was heard, their claim is still justiciable.
Well, now, where is Majors now?
He's in Evansville, Indiana.
Well, what does he do?
I haven't kept very good track of exactly what he's doing now. I do know that he's not currently a candidate for political office.
I meant, what job does he?
He probably doesn't have the same job that he had the last time I talked to him. I don't know for certain.
Floater, is he?
He was a student, and he worked a variety of jobs.
Is there any reason to think he will be a candidate again someday?
It's quite likely. He's continued to be politically active and serve on party committees. But there's nothing in the record expressing a specific office or a specific time at which he's going to run. And indeed, he hasn't run in the last two election cycles.
Why would Majors have standing?
He would have
to one side.
Pardon me?
The claim in this case is a claim of anonymous speech, right to anonymous speech. A candidate for office obviously has no right of anonymous speech. You can't file for office and saying, elect me, but paren, I'm not going to tell you who me is. I'm an anonymous candidate.
There's something.
The kind of person who would have the right of anonymous speech is not the candidate, but a person who wants to support the candidate. So I'm very doubtful that Majors has standing, since he has already stood up in public and revealed himself. Are there, among the plaintiffs in this case, independent speakers, that is, non-candidates, who want to support anonymously real candidates?
Well, certainly there are. One of them was named anonymous, but they were dismissed from the case because they didn't want to say who they were. But there's details in the facts that explain who the different plaintiffs are, what their interest is.
Okay, so who is the independent speaker in this case?
We could go with Carol Anton.
We could go with?
I'm sorry, I have a number of plaintiffs, and all of them want to speak about politics.
Is she an independent
politics.
Speaker, somebody who doesn't want to run and just wants her name below the radar?
She considered running. She is not running. She had decided not to run. She still has the interest in being able to communicate about politics.
Mm-hmm. So you think if this case went back, you could show that in the future, Ms. Anton would like to support anonymously other people who are named candidates?
Yes. And she wants to hear what other people who speak anonymously have to say. And that's what gives all of these individuals standing, is they want to be able to hear as well as speak.
Yeah, well, that's a dubious line of standing. People who have anonymous speech rights are the speakers, not the hearers.
I don't understand why that would be the case.
Other than the Supreme Court's holding to that effect.
I mean, the Supreme Court,
has law, we try to follow it.
Well, that's what I'm asking you to do. I think that's what the Supreme Court has said, is that we have a right to hear speech about politics. In the case about, in the Minnesota case about judicial speech.
And I really don't think you want to try to emphasize the rights of listeners, because the next thing that's going to happen is the state is going to stand up and say, listeners have an interest in knowing who the speaker is. If we're going to talk about listeners' rights, there's valuable information in knowing who the speaker is. The point of your case is to deprive listeners of the information about who the speaker is. Now, there may be a First Amendment right to do that, but we're not going to get there by talking about the rights of listeners.
Um, I'm out of luck. So, and I'm confused that we're at this posture because the narrowing construction that was given by the court below, which is a not utterly unreasonable one, it's not saving, but was to say that only candidate, that this no statute no longer applies to everyone. It currently applies only to to candidates and certain political committees.
What do you mean no longer? Has it been amended since the suit was brought?
No, it's a matter of interpretation by the district court.
The district court had a view about that, but it may or may not be the state's view, but I'll ask the state that question when they stand up.
It may or may not be. It was the central holding on which the dismissal relies. So it's inaccurate.
The district court did not decide this case in your client's favor on the merits. This case was dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
It reached one decision on the merits, which was the meaning of the statute.
The only judgment entered in this case says it is dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
That's certainly correct.
Well,
and I think that the reasoning for which the court dismissed it is a judgment.
That is a reason to decide on the merits on a state law ground. One could decide in your client's favor on the merits on state law or federal law, but the district judge did neither. He dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. That's why we're here.
And that decision was erroneous because there's a live controversy. Even if it were moot, it would still be justiciable under the exception to the mootness, the capable of repetition yet evading review exception to the mootness doctrine, as in McIntyre versus Ohio Elections Commission, where Mrs. McIntyre had died, but the court said these issues haven't gone away. This is still something we have to decide. And these issues in Indiana haven't gone away, and that's something that a court needs to decide. Also, another reason the case should not have been dismissed is that there was an erroneous standard for qualified immunity. The court found that the court dismissed damages claims based on the rationale that no prosecution had been engaged in. And that isn't the standard for how harm to free speech occurs. If people are prohibited from speaking and hearing, then there's been harm to the First Amendment values, whether or not there's any subsequent prosecution. Although the issue of subsequent prosecution does remind me of another reason that there's a live controversy, is that Majors was within the statute of limitations at the time that the hearing on the dismissal was held. And since he has an ongoing worry about maybe going to jail over what he said, his position is not moot, even though the election has passed.
Okay, you want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Ms. Barrow?
May it please the court, I understand that the county appellees are waiving oral argument, so it's just me. The appellees asked this court to affirm the district court's decision that dismissed this case on the basis of mootness.
Let me ask you in particular about Anton, who your adversary describes as somebody who wants to make anonymous political speech in support of candidates in future elections. And is there any reason why Anton would not have standing, or why Anton's claim would be moot?
She would not have standing because she is challenging this particular election law, which by its terms applies only to candidates, and certainly there's no way she could be held to have to comply with the statute. She couldn't be prosecuted for failure to comply.
And if she put up an anonymous sign, she couldn't be prosecuted?
No.
What would happen?
How do we know that from the statute?
The statute at Indiana Code 3-9-3-1 says that this section applies only to candidates in state and local elections.
No, I can't see the word only in 3-9-3-1. It's not there. It says this chapter applies to candidates in all elections and the following types of committees. Okay. Is there anything that says, and this chapter applies to no one else? Because the critical substantive provisions say that they apply to any person. And that appears to be a more compendious definition than candidates.
Your Honor, the we have maintained that the separate language of that lists candidates and so on does limit.
Well, is there, for example, some formal interpretation by the Indiana Attorney General to that effect?
No.
Now, the plaintiffs say that on their website, the state election officials have taken the broad reading. They've taken the view that it applies to any person.
The state's position is opposite, that the operation of this statute is limited. It does not include individuals such as Ms. Anderson.
So has the state withdrawn the material posted on its website? Is that now gone? If you're a person who wants to make anonymous speech and you don't want to take the criminal risk, how would you have assurance that under Indiana law you could do it?
Our position is that the statute tells you that the legislative scheme limits the operation of this statute.
Statute certainly does not. If the statute said the only people covered are the people listed in 3-9-3-1, that would be fine. But I can't find that language in the statute.
Your Honor, even if Ms. Anton
if there were an opinion of the Attorney General released to the public and posted on the website or something like that, then people would be safe. But awfully hard to see when the state of Indiana itself has taken the broad view, and there's no official opinion to the opposite effect, why anybody would be so clearly safe that they wouldn't even have standing to bring a lawsuit.
And that issue does go to standing, and because there is at least one plaintiff that the court found had standing, we do need to look at the mootness issue. If did one or any of
them... Let me ask you about that. With respect to Major, you know, there's this curious business, this capable of repetition but evading review. I thought that meant that in category of cases in which... because of the timing, the case couldn't be decided before the particular event that the plaintiff was challenging, that mootness just isn't a defense in that case in a case like that. I mean, isn't that Roe versus Wade?
That's Roe versus Wade. You still have to show that there's a reasonable expectation.
No, I don't think that's true, because suppose in Roe versus Wade, a woman brings a suit challenging some abortion law, and she's pregnant when she brings the suit, but of course by the time the case is heard, she's no longer pregnant. Could the state say, well, look, this woman, she's in her late 30s, we're not sure she's fertile anymore. We'd like to have her examined under Rule 35, because if she's not, she can't get pregnant again, then she can't possibly be affected by this law again. Is that a possibility?
I don't know. In a pregnancy case.
Well, if you don't know, it seems to me, then you don't know whether Majors case is.
I think the answer to that is, well, first of all, Meyer versus Grant does say that you have to show a reasonable expectation that the appellants would be subject to the same action again. That's the problem in this case. That's what Judge McKinney had a problem with regarding
the... Well, he certainly, I mean, it is stronger in a way than a Roe versus Wade case. As long as he's alive, he can always decide one of these days to run for another. There are countless offices he can run for. How detailed are we going to get into this? Do we say, well, after Nixon lost in 1960, surely he would never run again, right?
The case of Moore versus Ogilvie is very interesting.
Just a practical answer. How much time should a court a case is filed and it goes along for a long time, and of course it's an election or it's a pregnancy or something that has a strict time limit. So how much in time should courts spend investigating how likely it is that this person actually will repeat the particular activity?
I think what the courts look at is, yeah, the status
of your answer. What's the sensible solution to that
problem? I think the sensible solution is you allow the candidate, for example, to retain the status of being a candidate after the election, to bring this issue to a head and get a conclusion. The problem is, and I don't know the amount of time, but if this candidate doesn't keep the case moving.
Well, now, I don't understand you, because if you look at Nixon ran for president, lost in 1960, and 2 years later he ran for governor of California and lost. He didn't run again for 6 more years. Now, he could have run every 2 years.
And he even called a press conference and said, and you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore.
So it's not, I mean, because what you seem to be doing is imposing a duty on a candidate. If he wants to keep his litigation alive, he has to run in the next election, even though from a career standpoint, it might make more sense for him to, you know, wait till the memory of his loss.
Till things cool down a little bit, yeah.
I think it's just the opposite. If you look at, and I'd like to talk about, in Moore versus Ogilvie, you had two dissenting justices who were certain that case was moot because the election was over. Mm-hmm. And the majority said, well, no, this suit was docketed on October 8th. On the same day, appellants filed a motion to advance and expedite the hearing and disposition of the case. Similarly, in Stewart versus Taylor, it was significant that the plaintiffs filed
their lawsuit immediately.
You're
not meeting my concern. The only thing do you have anything going for you on Major's mootness except the fact that he didn't run in the next election?
Yes. To overcome mootness, you have to
don't be so legalistic. I'm asking you just a layperson's question.
Sure.
What do you have besides the fact that Major didn't run again as soon as in the next election to show that he's so unlikely ever to run again that this statute can't affect him?
You have the fact that he sat around and didn't pursue this lawsuit. I think that's the essence of those cases that say it's not moot, because you have the individual who pushes the case to conclusion.
Are you saying that he could have gotten this case over with before the election which he was running?
No, I'm saying when he
then
filed
it. What difference does it make? Look, once the election is passed, the case is pending, and he doesn't want to run in the next election. You know, he wants to wait a while. So what interest does he have in accelerating the decision?
Well, the interest is the plaintiff has to demonstrate.
I don't understand. Look, take the Roe versus Wade case again. The case is brought. The woman is pregnant. She knows she's not going to be pregnant anymore by the time it's heard. Does she have a duty to accelerate the case so it's decided as soon after she ceases to be pregnant as possible? I've never heard of that.
In that case, I would argue that the district court, if she waited more than a year after filing her lawsuit to ask for preliminary injunctive relief, I would say the district court
could hold
her case.
Have you ever encountered such a case? Or are you just winging it?
I'm just winging it, Your Honor.
Right, okay.
But in this case, we had plaintiffs who, obviously, the election was over. They were in a position still to ask for a hearing to demand preliminary injunctive relief.
What good would a preliminary injunction do them after the election?
They asked for a preliminary injunction before the election when they filed their lawsuit.
Okay,
but
now the election is over. Why should they ask for a preliminary injunction again? You want them just to jump through hoops, even though they'd have nothing to gain from this.
The plaintiffs are saying that they have everything to gain because of their ongoing interest in politics.
They have an ongoing interest, but they have an ongoing interest, but they don't want to run every 6 months, right?
I think the proposition of this case I think Judge McKinney's concern was that if you're a candidate who files a constitutional challenge to an election statute, you get in there and you litigate the case, and you don't sit around for a year and a half before asking for a hearing on the merits.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Farrell. Mr. Stewart, how much time does he have? Do you have anything further you want to say?
Well, I don't think in this case that it makes a difference how soon you ask for the relief if the issue is mootness of that, your opportunity for that relief going away at some point. I think you've correctly identified, as in Roe, that this is the kind of case that isn't going to be decided in the time frame of the election, and therefore we've got this well-recognized exception, and you do go on to consider those cases because they will go on to affect every subsequent election.
You could describe the inaction as a pregnant pause and get away with it, you know. But go ahead.
I'll let that go. And I'm insufficiently organized to remember the rest of the many issues that we
Thank you very much to both counsel. And our last case.